celebrating success, learning from legends, and growing poppies. This is Tall Poppy Talk with Grace Lewis.
Kia ora and welcome to Tall Poppy Talk. Today, we have a repeat. I'm very excited. We have a lot to talk about. It's Alice Soper. She's gracing us on Tall Poppy Talk. Over a year and a half ago is when Alice and I first spoke. We were talking about her advocacy for women's sports, playing rugby, writing for prominent New Zealand publications and global platforms, and the future of women's sport, of course. It was such a quality corridor about the opportunities ahead and just honestly the major progress needed in those opportunities. But everything has exponentially intensified since then, from her advocacy, her voice, and the hype with her growing following. And one of the biggest projects that Alice has worked on in our time apart is women's sports. It's a lot, but one of the big elements of it is this epic podcast she hosts where Wahine come together and they produce weekly episodes of her top tier yarns with tall poppies who are all over New Zealand sports scene prominently. So Alice, let's crack on. Heidi Mai, round two. First question is, where and how are you today?
Oh, wowee. Isn't it nice when other people do intros? So you're like, I'm cool. And other people's descriptions, what a ledge. Kia ora. I am speaking to you once again from Wainui o Mata in Te Whanganui Atara, so in the capital of our country here in Aotearoa. How am I today? Oh, you know, it's an interesting day to be having a yarn with you, Grace, as we spoke about for a minute beforehand. It is, by the time you folks are listening to it, you will have got over it already, I'm sure. But it's the day after the US elections. But as I was saying, that's a global moment, but the local one here is pretty messy too, and that this is the day that the government has changed the timeline. They're pretty good at that, this current one, and brought forward the introduction of the Treaties Principle Bill, which, for if you are not a listener from New Zealand, the Treaty Principles Bill is a right-wing, very right-wing part of our current government. Our government structures here work in teams, and the right wing of this team had put forward a bill which is looking to rewrite what is essentially our foundation document. And spoiler alert, I don't agree with their plans. So I'm feeling pretty hoha, which means, I don't know, agitated, frustrated at this action of this government. But don't, when you feel bad, do good, I guess. So we'll just, get stuck into some stuff, I think.
I actually really like that. When you're feeling bad, do some good. Because now you're on a podcast going to talk about all that good stuff. But it's a day to acknowledge that there's a lot.
Fascism is real, you know? And hey, as much as all the canary in the coal mine, which is like members of minority groups, have been telling you all for quite a while, it's been a bit shit, team. And if you're reckoning with it as the result of this election, that just tells you need to get connected in your communities, because it's been a bit shit, it's continuing to be, and the only people who save us are us. So find the thing that you care about, plug in, give those volunteer hours, because you're ultimately the difference. You can't save the world, but you can save yourself. So make sure that you're plugging in.
Yeah, and plugging in right on is exactly what you're doing, because I think when we spoke back in April of last year, like, you were already leading the charge in women's sport, women advocacy, like, just up. I was going to say up the wires. No, up the woman. But and then when we think about like a year and a half, the progress you've made professionally and personally, in classic Tall Poppy Talk style, what are the moments you're most proud of when you think back to when that time since we last spoke?
Yeah, and as I was saying to you, like, my ADHD brain like suffers from recency bias. So like whenever anybody's like, what's something you're proud of? I'm like, something that happened 2 weeks ago, because I have no thread of like, what's time anyway? What am I most proud of? Probably that I've been working for myself now for, it would have been the year after the World Cup is when I was officially on my own paycheck. And so that's like just over a year, I guess, that I have been, yeah, everything I make is for me. So working as a freelancer, and given, like, again, sorry to be all grim team, but like the state of the media here and like how that has impacting people's coverage and interest in women's sports, the fact that I've been able to like cobble enough to live is actually a cool thing. So continuing to be able to make a, yeah, make a living, but doing the things that I actually want to do rather than things I have to do, which I did for a long time, right? Like in order to be able to build myself up into a space to be able to make choices. So that's been very cool. And I think the other part of that I would say that I'm proud of is that over that time and working for myself, I, for the most part, have worked with people more than once, which generally is a nice thing. But also, like, every time I start to get like a little bit too anxious about what's coming up next, something will come across my desk. And it's really interesting when that does, because it's kind of like a very direct reflection back to you, I guess, of what it is people think you can do. Like when you have a slightly ambiguous job like I do, it's quite interesting what people will end up reaching out to you to be like, can you do this for us? I'm like, really? Okay. Yeah, sure. Let's figure it out.
Oh, I didn't think of that, because it's like I've had increasingly people reach out to me wanting interviews, and fuck, it's the coolest thing. I'm like, yes. Or if I've had a guest recommend another person who ends up becoming guest, like that positive affirmation is like, hey, they enjoyed the interview, they enjoyed the process, they think it's something that they want someone else to be involved in. I'm like, that's really cool. But you're right, also sometimes when if something comes across your desk, you're like, oh, I guess that's your perception of what I did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's like the cliche of like, I'm quite frequently hired for energy. I'm now like, I am aware, you know, there's the joke about being the personality hire, but like I literally am. Like there is, it's happened too many times now where they're like, what this panel needs is like, am I even relevant to this co-popper? Or is it just that I'll just, you know, come and do the energy, you know? So I'm like, okay, so she's a personality hire. That's funny. All the shit you're told like off about when you're younger, eh? They're now like, because you're a little mouthy guy. And as my mum used to always say to me when I was little, she'd be like, nobody likes a smart ass. Well, mum is wrong. Everyone fucking froths a smart ass. And so they are trying to hire me to be one. So that's a funny one. But it's also been interesting of late, like, obviously I've had a few different iterations of a career and have, I thought, been really getting plugged into sports and doing a lot of that. But it's been interesting in the last little bit, the things that have been coming into my inbox are more political, which, like, yeah, I mean, if you've read anything I'm writing, I am writing about the politics, the intersection of politics and sport. But it's been interesting to have been asked, like, to be doing overtly political things again. I'm like, okay, this is, we're putting that hat back on.
How do you feel about that hat going back on more than the sports one? Like, are you grappling with that? How do you respond?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, right? Because it's something, like I say, that's probably only popped up in like the last month or so. How do I feel about it? I think, to be honest with you, like the places that have been asked, I have felt quite humbled, I guess, by the people that have asked me to do it, right? Like, so it's... it's interesting, like, for it hasn't been party political, which is like how I've engaged with it in the past. And I don't think I would be inclined to do politics that way again. I think I'm probably going to be more inclined to be like co-popper driven. So when there is a particular issue or is a particular, yeah, fight to get stuck into, then yeah, put me in. But like going through the politics of politics, which is, you know, party politics, I don't know if I'm interested in that anymore. Because there is a whole layer of ambition to that type of style of stuff, which is more personal rather than like, I don't know, like outcome based. And I'm quite keen on like, we're doing this to get that. Like I want shit done now. You know what I mean? I'm too impatient to play like that long game. So get me stuck in and cause some trouble and then get in, get out, you know? So I think it's that. Yeah.
It makes me think of like, teachers or people who get into teaching because they love the impact they make on like rangatahi kids, and then they're so good at it that maybe they become a dean and then they become a principal, and then they're not actually getting to deal with kids anymore because that's like, because they're in that politics of the politics, they're not getting to have that daily impact of why they actually started in the first place.
Yeah, for sure, right? And like, that's the, when I did work in party politics, my job was generally volunteer recruitment and management and like training, which is like to have, it's really interesting. I will say that's like one part of watching the coverage out of the US that I'm like, they do give a better respect to that element over there than we do here, like field politics, which is knocking on doors, calling people on phones, is a key element of campaigns in a way that it's honestly like not necessarily given that respect in New Zealand politic. Like, I think maybe it's because we're smaller, people think you can literally talk to everyone, but it's like, no, you actually can, so that's why you should, you know. So like that type of stuff is what had motive, like, I really loved that. And because when you're plugging in with volunteers, man, you can't help but be connected to, like, back to the why of, like, why are you actually doing this? Because if someone's willing to actually turn up and give you their time, there's generally, like, a story attached to that that, like, can't help but keep you connected to what you're actually up to. I just think, yeah, that being in rooms where you just got to have meetings all the time, you can't just walk around and talk to real people. That's never going to work.
No, and what you say about the time element, I would have done it when I first reached out to you, but whenever I reach out to a guest, I'm like, I sign off with, there is no greater gift than time. Like, I acknowledge that right there. It's like, obviously money is valuable, resources, all those things, but your time is something that we only get given a certain amount. We don't know how much we've got. So even right now, you talking with me, that is the greatest gift you can give someone, is your present time. And so you can be somewhere and not be present. You're thinking about something else, so you're like checking your phone, and that's fine. But right now, to have like a corridor one-on-one and you're caring about what I'm asking you and I'm intently listening, like, that is that gift. So to segue slightly, I'm kind of interested in, for you, like this work that you do, and like you said, you kind of maybe going slightly back more into politics hat, but like in general, what do you find yourself revisiting in your work? Because right now, like, you write a lot, you've got the podcast, you're using social media. What is that subject? And I know a lot of them because I follow, but what is the kind of subjects that you find yourself revisiting the most?
Yeah, that's interesting, right? Because someone, my partner, actually, when I started doing the podcast, she was like, do you feel like you're starting to talk in loops? And I was like, absolutely. There are definitely key things I say all the time. But I was like, but I actually feel like it happens more in my writing. Like, I feel like I have written the same column, like, over and over and over again. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, wow, what does Alice think about this? The same thing I thought the last time this issue came up, or the same thing that is connected to that same value set, right? Like, you know, it's nothing about us without us. That's a pretty standard one. It's the one that I, like, what are my key lines? I crack myself up because that's the politics of it all, right? Like, the way my brain works is when I'm writing a column, generally I'll write like 600 words, right? But I'll write one sentence and I'm like, oh, that's good. That's a good one. I'm going to put that in my brain for future use. So the one that comes out a lot in context of interviews is, it's easier to stage a thing than change a thing, because we've seen that a lot around, people are really desperate to like reach out and grab moments of progress. And when it comes to like women in sports, we've got a lot better at staging it, but we haven't truly changed it, because the position of women within is still one to be bent on knee and groveling with gratitude at all time, rather than be able to actually stand and mother and be like, this is what we're entitled to. So those attitudes that are attached to that change haven't really moved. So that's a classic. The other one that's come up recently is, it's not just about pay equity, it's also about play equity. So this is where a number of people are starting to get quite cute, and that we're seeing the professionalism start to come up for various codes, and women are starting to get paid more for their playing. But the reality is they're not actually playing that much. You know, you look at the Black Ferns, for example, they might play around 7 tests a year, but below that, there's only 6 games of Super Rugby Opaki. And below that, there's only like 6 to 7, maybe 8 if you make the final, games of Whare Upama Cup. Like, that's so, we need more play equity in terms of like time on grass also to be able to fully develop like talent and sponsorship and viewership and all of it, like all of that is related. Yeah, and then the other part,
everything around, yes, it, like
that's the next thing I was going to say, is that it's not just about like, it's not just about the platform that these people are stepping onto, but it's also about like who is building and how we are building that platform. So that's looking at that ecosystem, right? And I think in the US example this year, we've seen a really prime picture of this, which is there's been a lot of attention and interest in someone, and that classic rivalry now between Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese. But like what's actually the story underneath that is that that story was able to cut through because the platform was built strong enough that when they stepped on it, they could be seen. Because there is any number of players, past players, that could, that are just as good as those players are now. But what's better now is the commentary, is the punditry, is the coaching, is the broadcast, is all of those pieces, is the fan engagement, so that it allows them to really reach that full height. So we're needing to not just invest in the people, but also the platform that they stand on. And I think that's the part where we're kind of falling over a bit. That goes back to that stage change thing. We're building, knocking up stages really quick, but then we take them down again. And it's like, no, we need to build like a lasting infrastructure underneath.
Yeah. And like you say, because even in someone, if I wanted to be like a sports commentator or journalist or asking these questions, you don't even know what you should ask. So we have to establish some sense of not like, you think typically, obviously with men's sports, is the questions, there's history, the reporters might know a lot more because there's a lot more access. Like before we started recording, we were talking about like even just knowing what positions people play, because there's not a long-standing database of that. People like you have to do a lot of mahi, so a lot of work to figure that out, which is going to be pay dividends for the next people who come through, because they just have to Google, and Alice already wrote about it, which is awesome. But to your point there, it's not just about the players needing to do better. It's the referees, it's the broadcasting, it's the community. It's having someone to cheer for and to cheer against and have some sense of connection to it, because some people will watch sport and love it just because they love sport. But like me, NFL, I've now got on board with in America. And it's because one of the players on the Chiefs used to go to my college. And so now I'm invested because I have some sort of narrative and I care. And that's why I want to pay attention. If you don't have any narrative, you lose fans. Yeah.
I mean, look, there's two things I'd say to you there. The first one is, if you want to, you already are a journalist, right? So let's just check you on the way that you're cutting your own poppy there. So we're just going to check you on that real quick, babes. Okay? Because we're just going to do that, because like you would say to me, Alice, you're a journalist, I've never trained in this shit, I've been published all over the place now, but like literally I'm pretty sure I had to like Google, like I read other people's, like how do they structure a column before I wrote one, because I'd never fucking written a column before. And then someone was like, we write this one for the Sunday Star Times. I was like, because some dude who now doesn't have a job, so sad for you, decided to have a pop at me in one of his columns. And he's a fool, because he knew about me, but not enough. Because if he'd known enough, he wouldn't have picked that fight. So he does that, and then I do a tiki tour of all the media outlets that week, and then at the end of it, get asked to write a rebuttal, right? But then I'm not a fool either, because that's something I think, in terms of being intentional about what you say, people will often want me to say something, right? Like, because and that's something that I've encountered all of my life. Again, like, you know, when I'm saying people hire me, be a personality hire. Something I've also come to realize is that people intentionally now, whether they necessarily know they're doing it or not, will engineer situations where they will put me in contact with things that will piss me off because they want me to say the thing. They want me to say the thing that they're able, either unable to articulate in the moment, or feel too fuck a ma, or like can't because of the position that they're in. It's too high risk, right? So they'll feed that to me, and they're like, Alice, get mad about it for me, right? So having to be aware that that's how some people are intentionally or unintentionally using me and my energy. But like, I'm very conscious when that comes across that, like, I don't want to write the thing you expect me to write. You know, I think about that in terms of, you know, the prime example, was that in the last year? Must have been. Old mate Sonny Bill Williams had retweeted something that was actually quite transphobic. And I happen to, I'm not really on Twitter anymore because what a hellfire. But I had replied to him at the time. I was like, bro, this isn't it. Like, and I'm disappointed, you know. And then because of that, like, they were like, oh, someone was like, oh, we want you to write about that. And I was like, okay, let's write about it then. But I'm not going to write a takedown of him because that's actually what he does in this moment is actually neither here nor there. What I wrote about instead was the idea of, like, what was the line? The line I use on this one is they say not never to meet your heroes, but maybe you shouldn't follow them. Because the thing is like, what social media gives you access to is a whole picture of who someone is. And for a long time, we've had quite, going back to your point around stories, we've had quite a one-dimensional view because we've only had the view through our media, traditional media, right? Which means that they're deciding who's interesting, what storylines, why these storylines. But what social media gives is a more direct interaction, and that has its positives, but it also has its negatives in terms of these people aren't always going to be polished. And the wider point that they made in that piece was about how the problem that we have with, like, social media, and this ties back, oh wow, I'm doing a whole loop on this for you, mate. The problem that we have on social media at the moment is that people are trying to use it as a change place conversation. It's not a place to have disagreements, because generally your interaction with people is actually at your most diametrically opposed. You've come into contact with each other either by the algorithm or by your own, like, doom scrolling with someone that you've, something you fundamentally disagree with that is hitting, like, really hot buttons for you. And that conversation is never going to be one that changes minds. That's just going to be an entrenching, right? So rather than thinking about that as being a change, a place for change making conversations, no, it's an aggregate. It's where we should be finding other people like us. You find the aggregation points so that I'm not talking, everything I do on social media that I write, that I put out in public, is never actually about changing anyone's minds. It's about rallying those who agree with me so that we can build up enough of our own mana and our own capability. And look, if I can give you words to articulate an experience, then beautiful, what a gift. Then let's do that. And then we can go offline together and push for the change we need. But that change is not going to happen in a comment section. It never will, but you will find the people that you need to find there.
And that's why I enjoy and love the podcast realm or the long form so much, because on your profile you can just go scroll and you'll find some things and you'll read comments and you'll interpret it, because, like, it's the age old thing with communication. If I send a text to you, Alice is going to read it very differently than me, because you read it at 10 a.m. I read it at 4 p.m. The days change. What I'm like, there's so much you can take away and take out of context. But with long form auditory, you're trying to make that change because someone's tuning in. And I'm like, listen to the whole thing. Like, hear this person out entirely. But I really love what you say about it's not the platform for making change. It just isn't. Because also another thing I think about a lot, my one-liner, is do you want to be right or do you want, like, what's your solution? Because if you go into this headstrong of just wanting to say, hey, you're so idiotic, you're so this, and this is coming from someone who's been in the States now for 6 years, so you can imagine there's been a few moments where I fundamentally disagree with someone. But you have to go in with a genuine curiosity and this human to humanness of, okay, I want to understand how you can feel so passionately the other way. Because I don't understand that, like, and then that you can actually have a conversation and still not agree with them, but see where they're coming from and maybe introduce some humanness back into the conversation. Because you're not going to get change by just telling people that they're idiots or they're this or they're that. You have to try to speak to the humanness. That's how you'll actually get a change. But It's easier said than done.
It's interesting, right? Because I think, yes, and. So, yes, and. Sometimes I'll just fucking dunk on someone because they deserve it. But I'm very conscious when I do that is I will dunk on systems, not individuals. So even though, like, the reputation that precedes me in some rooms, right, that is like, Alice is what an angry guy, da-di-da-di-da, you know, or, like, worried about what I'm going to say, da. I don't generally, and again, if you've read my work, it's very rare that I will name someone as like an individual as a point of pain. I will talk about systems often, and structures, because ultimately in any of these situations, it doesn't actually matter who that particular individual is in the seat at the time. If the structure is such, you could replace that with a good person and they're going to end up, if they're in a bad system, they're going to end up as a bad actor. Like, the systems themselves need to change.
Yeah.
And so, like, putting the columns and stuff together, I'm just trying to put some context back into those conversations. And it's funny because, you know, when you're saying, oh, watching sports connecting with this, I actually don't watch as much sports as I think people think I watch. Like, my fiance, often people will say to her, oh, must be hard being with me, you know, because you've got to watch the little thing. She's like, no, I love it. She watches much more sports than I do. I, like, if it's a good game and I'm interested in it, then yeah, I watch it. But, like, casual observing, nah, I actually tune out from it a lot of the time. I'm not necessarily that interested in the, like, score lines. It's storylines, not score lines, you know?
Oh, interesting. Whereas I can tune in to pretty much any game. Yeah. Or any match or anything, and if it gets gamified, I'm immediately like, okay, tell me the end goal and what's the main penalties, and then I'm in. That's at any sport can be gamified, and I'm hooked.
Yeah,
it.
See, dipping in and, like, seeing what other people are doing, but then again, I just go to a structural thing. So, like, classic is when I watch part of the, I think I watched some of the Super Bowl, maybe I watched, like, the last quarter of it or whatever. I'm not really watching the sport. What I was actually watching and was like, oh, that's really interesting, is I love the way they shoot it. And I was like, I wish we did that more in rugby. So, like, often, you know, that they set up behind the snap, right? Like, behind that line, and the action is all behind the offensive line. And we don't do that in rugby. We shoot it from the side. And I often wonder, like, when I'm watching it, why I can't really understand what's going on. It's like, because you never play rugby that way. I don't stand on the sideline and look in and try and see what the play is going to be. You stand, you're like at the back and you're looking up, right? And it was my ref mate, won't say who because I don't want to get them in trouble, but sent me some footage of one of the preseason games that wasn't televised, that was the referee content, and it was that. It was shot from behind because it was a drone, and I could immediately see the pattern that was being set up, and I was like, oh, it's not that I don't know, it's that the picture doesn't actually show. Whereas when you were looking at that offensive line on the snap, when you're watching NFL, I know it's, you can see. Like, you can see from that quarterback's perspective, so it makes it easier to see what their moves are going to be because the space opens up in front of you, you know? So I was like, oh, that's just something I'd want to steal from them to apply to rugby union. Just change the way we shoot the game.
Yeah, as you were talking, I was like, imagine if with rowing or running or swimming or something, like, if you saw it how the competitor saw it, or even we have, like, with rowing, sometimes the coxswain's voice, so for those who don't know, they're the mighty smaller person who sits in the boat and steers and does all the calls. One time we overlaid our coxswain's, like, race recording with it and then showed, like, the coach or someone. And I remember showing my parents and they were like, oh, that's what it's like for you because no one else ever hears it. And I'm like, oh, it would be so much more engaging if you could see or hear what the athlete in the boat was actually feeling and seeing and hearing, and then you'd understand more about the intensities of what's going on.
Yeah, and that would give you, like, a completely different gear shift, right? Like, because then, I mean, I don't know about you, but whenever I'm watching boat stuff, I never have any comprehension of where the distance is, because it, on stroke to stroke, I'm doing, this is an audio medium, Alice. I'm doing my hands bobbing back and forth in front of each other. But, you know, when you're stroke to stroke, it's like, I actually don't know who has a lead here right now because of the angle of this. Or they'll do that weird angle, which is like just putting both the noses in the shot. Or they'll do the zoom out that has like no line across it. Like just put an overlay graphic line so I can see what's going on. Like we're doing, you know, America's Cup stuff. Like this is the type of thing, the production of it. One of my favorite episodes of a podcast, I'm going to have to remember which podcast it was, but it was actually talking about the like production that goes into showing a game, right? And they were talking about it in the context specifically of the Football World Cup that was held in South Africa and about how the Vuvuzelas, do you remember that? Like that buzz that they would make. They were fucking up all their broadcasts because you actually couldn't hear any of the regular soundscape over the top of that buzz. And they're like, so they artificially put in a bunch of those sounds. And I don't think I had realized that beforehand, that like our cameras can go so much closer to the action than our audio tech can. So like if you're watching a rowing race and you hear a little splish, 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 they've put that in after because they can't hear that on the sideline. That's an autofill to give you that texture of a splish, splish.
Splash, splash. I think too with rowing in particular, like it could be so much more engaging because to your point about I'm a rower, so I can say like, no, lane five's not winning. It looks like they are, but the angle's fucked up. They're not. Like, but it's just not a sport that has been placed or positioned as a really intense spectator sport when you're live, yes, and when it's the Olympics. But beyond that, like not a lot of people go down to Karapiro and watch. But I think if it was filmed and produced, like the production was different, people would maybe appreciate how much more competitive and intense an experience. Same for rowing, but any other sport. Yeah.
No, my mum always hated netball, like, because that was her main sport, but she hated how netball was shot in New Zealand. And I think, to be fair, that's because of a lot of rugby's influence in terms of cam or operators. They shot action too close.
Yeah.
And it's like netball is actually like football, and that like it's often about people moving in and out of space off, like it's not who has the ball now, it's who has the ball next. And so you actually have to have that like wider lens view. And had like, it would be really interesting, say, if you were to uplift a NBA, you know, broadcast team and put them down here to shoot premiership netball to see how they would maybe look at framing those angles up. They would probably look at doing it quite differently. And I never thought we were going to end up talking about this, Grace, but yeah, that's the type of thing that would be so interesting in terms of learning from one another, in terms of how do you package up this sport as well, like to make it as inviting and as exciting as it is to people such as yourself that have played this other one, and then you see it on the TV and you're like, oh, you've taken all the excitement out of it.
Yeah, I love that we've ended up here too, because even like F1, like a lot of people increasingly enjoying F1 because they are getting behind the drivers, etc. That's a whole conversation, but they have the in-car shot, they have the outside. But to your point, going way back, circling of the reason why you just not even need to raise the or give more opportunity for players to play, but everyone around them is like, when you watch NFL, they'll do that wide thing and then they'll have dozens, if not hundreds, of channels of commentators, of experts saying, okay, well, they're going to do this play and this person's going to run here, because people are so involved and educated and they know about the lore and the everything else about it. But that's what we're missing, in particular in women's sports. And you know what's interesting too? One of my housemates does like a fantasy league, and they were saying for some of the women's NBA that they actually had people who were tracking the periods of the players, and because that would factor into the bet systems.
That's psychopathic, but also incredible.
I was like, what? And he was like, well, statistically,
like, what are they doing?
Because I don't know what they're doing. Like, the information was being found out, because that's my first question. But like, they would look at the trends of certain performances. Like, there was a cyclical nature to performances that were potentially different. I'm not going to say worse, but like tended to maybe be lower performing. And then they like tracked it because people were betting so much that like analysts were like, hold up. Because you imagine if there was something as prominent in a male athlete's life people would want to know because they're tracking all this shit. So for the woman, they were like, all right, Grace, yeah, she's coming up. All right, I'm going to put her for less points because maybe she's...
Oh, see, that's interesting. I always played my best rugby game first day of my period, which actually makes sense in terms of the hormones in it because apparently that's when your profile is like higher testosterone at that point in time because you're not pumped full of the estrogen or whatever. And so I go fucking mental.
They would know that.
I mean, I knew that, like, from my own playing experience that, yeah, if it was, like, coming... You know, when most people would be like, I don't want to have my period when I was playing. I was like, nah, I'm always like a bit more rowdy on those days. Like, let's go.
Well, these analysts would know that. They'd be like, put more money on Alice.
That's, Isn't that crazy? Is like some fucking hand. I don't know about that, Grace. I mean, it's true, but I'm like, fuck, what are they doing? Are they checking the sanitary bins at the complex? Like, what are they doing? They're bribing Clue or whatever period trackers. Imagine that. They've got, instead of the Fantasy League, like being sponsored by, I don't know, Gillette or something. It's some sponsored by Clue. Yeah. And it's like, get a Clue to your Fantasy League. And you get a notification. Oh, your top players are now. That is fucking mad.
It's so mad. But my response when I first heard this was you, where I was like, that's fucked up. And then I was like, or is it kind of showing like, hey, there's some progress being made because these analysts, these people betting are like, bros, there is like this huge element we're missing with these female athletes. We need to get it involved. I just thought it was like, yeah, I don't know how I feel. I just was like, interesting. That is interesting.
It is interesting. It's interesting in general though, right? Because we've seen more gambling come in to the gay, like, women's sports down here. And there's two things I want to say about that. One is I am deeply uncomfortable with the way that the TAB has been repositioned within Sky Broadcasts. They have done a thing recently when it comes to rugby broadcasts where they are bringing betting into, like, the panel, and it's yuck, dude. Like, watching the WXV, which is one of the women's major tournaments, global tournaments, they would, like, have the halftime analysis panel and then would go, and we're going to go check in with this person. You know, like, throwing to the weatherman, but the weatherman instead is this woman that's talking about betting odds. And, like, given the problematic space that that has within our society, yuck. Even worse when it comes to men's rugby at the moment, because they get one of the people that's usually on the mic to then give you the odds as well. And there's, like, an element of normalizing it that just feels really off. And look, there's so many things that you could talk about in terms of the way in which sports, professional sports, is really struggling at the moment, I think, with their value proposition and how they're actually making money. Like, the 30-year experiment, which has been men's professional sport in this country, is not coming out great in terms of things that these findings are. You know, like, we should be on much surer ground than we are. So they're selling themselves out in this way, and it feels really yuck. So that's, like, one part. The second part I'll say is, I have made my barber so much money, I don't have to pay for haircuts because they get the odds wrong constantly. And that goes back to, like, data stuff and a lack of knowledge that is obviously informing some of these statistics where it's like, yeah, okay, I don't even look at it, but I would imagine what the TAB had the odds for Ireland beating New Zealand at in terms of women's rugby would have been, like, mad payout, and that's silly. Like, yes, it was an upset. Yeah. It wasn't that upsetting of an upset, though. Like, it wasn't well with outside of realms of possibility. It's happened before. So, like, these type of things where that memory, that institutional memory isn't there for us. And so that's also manifesting in terms of if I was inclined to gamble, which I am not, I would be able to make quite a lot of money right now on a side hustle. just making bets on their odds.
Yeah, no, I'm fortunate and I agree with you that that's not anything that's ever interested me, but it is, especially I see it a lot because of how integrated it is. Like, the sports betting is so integrated with like UFC, NFL, a lot of those typically more male skewed. No, UFC is actually a decent mix, but yeah, I see it a lot in the way the broadcasting covers it because they're just huge sponsors.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's yuck, right? Like, it's but it's also, again, this is also cyclical. So again, I'm going to do my classic zoom out. That, of course, it's gambling right now, because previously it was alcohol, and before that it was cigarettes. Like, there is the naivety of sports as well around understanding the ways in which various vices will use them to sports wash, right? Like, the idea of sports will position themselves as the best of our ideals, and then we will sell those ideals to various sponsors. And I think there needs to be a better duty of care by various sports to understand what exactly they are selling out to. We've seen this a lot in recent years around where the main, when I'm talking about that instability of financial model, where a lot of the funding for like major sponsorship funding is actually coming out of the United Arab Emirates, which have, you know, their own problematic human rights records. And we are relocating tournaments to be held there, at the same time trying to say, you know, pride rounds, women's rounds, not to mention like workers' rights, etc. It's like these things are in fundamental odds. And so if you are selling out your values that constantly, what your value ultimately decreases. So I think there is a lot for people to start thinking about in terms of like that short-term versus long-term understanding of what your value proposition is. And right now we're seeing a lot of short-term moves that are not going to pay off in terms of really sustainable growth. And I think that, to bring this back to women's sports, I think that that's something that people are fundamentally getting wrong with us at the moment, that this conversation about professionalism doesn't just mean a paycheck. Okay. And actually, for many athletes, if you actually speak to them, that's probably quite far down the list in terms of things that they truly want. And a lot of it is about professionalizing, again, that wider ecosystem, that platform that we're stepping into. People would sacrifice wages if they had better coaching, if they had better environments, if they had better training facilities, if they had better match schedules. All of these things, you would end up like, you would take less money to have a better investment in that. And you know that's the case because still so many women are paying basically for no wages. But like, if we're going to invest and really grow something sustainable, you have to invest in that infrastructure, because it's that will hold up the performances as they come and go. Because again, those teams are cyclical too. You might have a fucking mean team right now, but talent goes through the transition, and you can't, as much as you can plan for something, sometimes it just happens. Injury happens, etc. But you have to have those infrastructure underneath in order to be constantly developing and moving and pushing it to be the best that it can be.
Yes, and I would add to that is, like, I think a lot as well, specifically with women's sports, is that you would be keener, and this is coming from my experience, to have competitors who are at a higher level. Because when you get athletes who just want to see how far and fast and strong they can push themselves and their teams, it's all good you being successful, but it's like you want to compete and you want to be competed against the best. And if the system isn't advocating and is not able to include people who can really give it a go, you're not versing the best.
Yeah.
And that's just upsetting your, even if it's just down to your basic athletic competitive nature, it's like, you know, you're not versing the best, and that's what you'd also sacrifice wages for.
Yeah, right. And like, this is the thing around, again, like short-term strategies, where like one of the big thing that's on the horizon in terms of like initiatives for women's rugby, because I'll always go back to that being my wheelhouse, is the introduction of a British and Irish Lions women's team. And that is the stupidest shit you could ever come up with. As my friend Ellie Donnelly says, she's like, if that thing didn't exist for men, you would never invent it for women, because it makes no sense. And everything attached to it is just like, there's no, what's the out, like, what for though? Is it, it's purely because you want to replicate something that men have, but there's got no reason for that within the women's game. And that we actually have a better opportunity right now to take our game global, because these traditional, like, let's just say colonial powers, are not as entrenched as they are within the men's game. in the men's game, they talk often about tiers of rugby, tier one, tier two, which is basically just like established versus emerging rugby nations, right? But the problem in men's rugby is that the established nations gatekeep the shit out of that, and they only want to keep playing each other. And occasionally they might deem one of the worthy teams to come and have a little go, and often that's actually because they feel guilty because they've been stealing players from that nations forever. I'm talking Samoa, I'm talking Fiji, etc. That they will then go, oh yeah, you can come and play in our tournament. But we don't have that kind of situation right now. Like if you look at the spread of rankings within world rugby for women, yeah, at the moment it's kind of like England and the rest. Like England, Canada at the moment, New Zealand and France are changeable. And then below that, honestly, any team could beat any other team on the day. And that's not something to be feared. Like, that's a good thing. And we should be continuing to promote opportunities to keep that and actually close that gap up with that England at the top. Because you don't want it to be a foregone conclusion. That's the most boring thing there can be in sports. But I think the problem that it comes back to how we sell sports has been that we are, in this country, we tend to sell based on teams, not personalities. And when you're selling on team, you have to sell on results. And when you sell on results, you have to win all the time, which is why New Zealand rugby is up to fucks at the minute, because they're not winning all the time. Those gaps have closed, and they don't know how to tell the story outside of that.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Because Tall Poppy, like, this is the kind of closing question I want to have. With you, we've discussed it, and we have a whole episode, so you can talk about that too. But what I find really interesting with your podcast, Women's Sports, is like, talking to these tall poppies all the time, like, as you having been the other part in that conversation, do you notice a lot of tall poppy syndrome manifesting, however that is, in these interviews you have with Wahine, with the woman? How do you see that?
It's interesting, right? I don't think we've actually let any of them grow that tall, is probably what I would say to you. Like, often we get women on there who have done like fucking incredible things, but it's probably the first time you've heard of them. And I know that because when I'm putting the research together before I sit down, like there's maybe like one article that was written in like 2018. And it's the classic way that we tend to, like, for a long time when women were profiled in media, they were like, you only got written about if things were going incredibly well, incredibly bad, or you were had some sort of tangential relationship to a man we're supposed to care about. Like, those were the three ways that you got something written about you. And so it's really interesting, like, speaking to these women and being like, yeah, a lot of these people we don't know about. We don't not only know about them, but we also don't know about, like, their sport as well, and, like, how well New Zealand has done in these individual sports. Like, that's been really interesting, right, is, like, We will finish it having spoken to 50 women who represent New Zealand in 50 different sports. And, like, people won't even realise that we play that many, you know, and that people play that many on a world stage. And that, like, all of this is there. But, yeah, in terms of the tall poppy of it all, yeah, no, these women haven't even been allowed to grow tall because they're, like, there's no sunlight on it. There's no light being shone on those women in order to, like, have them feel cool about it. So, yeah, they are all naturally humble, but that's also just by nature of, like, we really haven't gassed them up enough, like, to ever have a chance at having a big head, you know? And it's so interesting, like, talking to them, like, yeah, in the one hand, that, like, that groundedness, and in a lot of cases, like, not having such intense scrutiny and things on you can be good. But on the other, like, we should be, like, really razzed about these people, you know? And it makes me think of something I was going to say to you earlier when I told you to call yourself a journalist. Like, it's the whole thing, too, of, like, while we're building all of this infrastructure, my friend, the other part we're building is how we cover these sports. And we can change that. And I think I'm really keen on doing that because I really don't like how sports journalism works currently. It is very male because it's been designed and delivered by them, and it's not my interest. I want to know who the person is beyond, like, what medal they won there, what thing they won there. I want to know who they are. I want to know how they felt in those type of things. I want the human of it all the time, less of the stats and more of the person, you know? And that's like, and being careful with that, and like the way that you have those pre-conversations, you know, there's a couple of things that I'll say to them before every chat. And one of them is like, this is a conversation about you and your experience, so you can't fuck it up, right? Like, I'm here to make you seem interesting. If you don't seem interesting, I've failed at my job, not you at yours, right? So we're just having a conversation. Because we just are having a conversation, we might end up down some paths that you might not be comfortable in talking to me about. So you can tell me to piss off and that's fine. Nobody has yet, but like, that's always the offer there too, because it's like, I'm not trying to get anyone. And that's the thing I think that I really get frustrated about when I see just any type of sports talking about it anyway. Like, it's always trying to gotcha. Like, you know, when someone has a bad performance and then they'll be like, well, you suck today, please explain. It's like, I suck today. Sometimes you just do. Well, now we know it's your period cycle. Do you know what I mean? But like, it's like boring. You know what I mean? Like, it's not really, don't tell me about how you suck. Tell me about how you're going to be good next time. And like little things like, also if I'm writing about people and I am writing about selection, I don't tend to like to write someone down. I'll instead write somebody else up. So if I think that somebody else should be picked over someone else at the moment because of form, what I'll do is I'll speak about the form of the person that's playing well rather than kicking the person that's not playing as well. You know, like, I don't have to write that this person has fallen off and maybe needs to retire. That's something for them to process in their own time. But what I can instead do is shine the light on someone that I think is doing something really good. I just like watching the Olympics, mate. I don't know if you felt like this, but like, this is a bunch of sports I don't really know. I'm finding my way in, and just how negative people are all the time. I don't really want that. You know, like, we have the alternative commentary collective here in New Zealand, and I'll say something controversial, what a surprise, which is that really that alternative? Because it's another panel of white dudes, pretty much. White dudes from the 90s, pretty much. They're pretty much the same demographic. They're just being cheeky, right? But they're not that different. It's still the same worldview kind of calling it, right? I would actually like an alternate commentary, which is like everyone just praising everyone all the time. And then they're like, oh, that's too positive. I'm like, yeah, but sometimes I just want that. Like, sports should be my comfort and my escape. Yeah. I don't need to be like, oh, they slipped on the beam. It's a massive failure. I'd be like, this woman has ended up at this Olympic Games, even though her country has nothing for her there. And look how amazing it is that she's even fucking here. Like, I just think everybody has their version of success. And wouldn't it be cooler if we were just telling those stories rather than holding it up against some arbitrary marker? I'm like, let them figure that out for themselves, you know?
I absolutely love that. I think too, like, part of the coverage, the Olympics I experienced was the American coverage, which, and I know that there's toxic positivity, whatever, but what I will say is so cool is that part you're saying there about the personality, the behind it. Anytime they're talking about an athlete, it's like, well, this athlete, their parents, blah, 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 trained them, like started playing soccer with them because their younger brother, blah, blah, blah. Like, they'll give you so much story. But also on that, as my American head coach would say, like, you might be by design, you're going to lose this race by 10 seconds. If we just look at it on paper. Try and lose it by 9, and then that's a success. Yep. And that was how we looked at things. So like, not getting first, whereas in New Zealand, I found like, if you didn't get first, mm-hmm. you're last sort of mentality. We joke, but that's it. Whereas here it got instilled of like, you got 9th in the country. Like, I remember we got 9th. That was so cool. It was the biggest deal. And I was like, I wouldn't be, guys, we got 9th. Like, what? But that was like, you got fucking 9th. So to your point about the positivity, that's something I've really enjoyed about sports here and why people feel so willing to wear the shirts and deck out and do all the tailgating for a team where they know absolutely no one. Like, imagine in school, if you went and watched someone or a team, I remember first 15, it was like, oh, who are you dating on the team? You couldn't be going otherwise. And like, if the women's, it was like, oh, who do you know? Like, is your mate playing? Is it like your partner, whatever? And I was like, can't I just go because I want to watch the game and get behind it and, to your point, enjoy sport?
But isn't that also just indicative of like, that's the only way we can have connection with people, because we're not telling the stories otherwise? So like, that question of who are you related, who are you dating, like, that is actually just saying, how are you connected? Or like, what is the like personal here? Because people are looking for that all the time. They want to know what the personal is. So if we did a better job of telling those stories of the personal, then you'd be like, yeah, I'm here because I'm like so excited to see this potential person maybe hit this record for themselves, you know, like that you're brought in a different way. But I think it's like, also it's to do with populations, right? The reason why we're like, we want to be first is like, yeah, well, that's because we've got like a couple of handy that are doing things here. So we're like, oh, so if I'm, you know, 150th of 150, you know, it's not as cool. Whereas being like ninth in the US when there's millions upon millions of people, I can understand why that is something to brag about. So it's like, there is an element of scale that is probably attached to that. But I think at the same time, yeah, we got to like, just celebrate your wins. I mean, that was a beautiful thing. Caitlin Fielder, who was the mountain trail runner, said to me like in the last week or whatever it was, where she was saying like everything is relative, right? She was like, you know, people will say to me all the time, oh, I can't run 7Ks and you're running like 80 or whatever. She's like, yeah, but I'm in a team with people who do ultra marathons, so they're running like 200Ks, so my 80K compared to their 200K is nothing. And she's like, but ultimately like 7Ks is more than the person who's just sitting at home and is like the dream of somebody else who can't run, you know, like, so all of these things, is it's all relative. But I just think if we got broader, yeah, in our definitions of success, we could also just tell more stories too, because if the only way we're telling a success story is a gold medal and not a process, like that's the opposite of what all athletes will tell you. That's the other line they give you all the time. It's not about the outcome, it's about the process, and having a good process will ultimately lead to a good outcome. So I think we need to get better at telling process stories rather than just outcomes.
That's another one-liner right there. Oh, Alice, I knew this would be a good kōrero, and it bloody is. I'm gonna hit you with my sign-off question, because I have this hard pivot, but we need to talk more than a year and a half, that's for sure. I like what you're saying about the sports, just a tangent, like the sports coverage and the journalism, because that stuff... Mm.
Well, we're seeing people pull out with mental health stuff all the time, right? And like just also press conferences, that's dumb. It's a dumb format. I don't want to talk to someone 10 minutes after they lost. They haven't processed it yet. Like, what the fuck am I going to get out of that conversation? No,
it's a gotcha. It's a gotcha moment. And it's seeing them there looking depressed or looking this because they haven't processed it.
There's no like, what's the story? The story is what everybody else is getting when they're all sitting in there. I hate it. I hate going to them too, because the thing is a lot of time when I'm there, I have done my research. I have a depth of understanding. And now, because I've turned up prepared, the other mates in the room get access to what I've asked. You haven't done the due diligence of knowing your shit. You've just turned up here to say, how are the girls feeling? And now you get access to my knowledge? Nah, piss off, pay me.
Little things like that I think are missing sometimes in sports journalism is like, ease them into the conversation, and rather than, oh, how are you feeling?
But that's because of the way that we train journalists, Grace. That's because we train people to not put themselves in the story, and that's bullshit. Because how do you get, like, people, you know, a nice piece of feedback that I got a while back on the Substack that I write, right, where I just write about whatever I want, and one of the things I've really enjoyed doing there is essentially having a conversation and then writing it up afterwards with someone, because that's, I think, the really cool thing for me, like during this process, is like lots of shit is changing really quickly, so it's actually nice to have a record and how important it is to have things written down still. Like, yeah, we have podcasts and yeah, we have this, but there's something different about the written word and around like just the access that is like on the record. That's, you know, what was put there. But like, hold on, I've interrupted myself now, gone on two tangents off my original statement. But okay, so one of the best pieces of feedback that I got from that was that one of the people that was reading, she was like, I'm always so impressed with how much you get from people, like how much they share with you.
Wow.
But if you look at my transcripts, like whenever I do it and I put it through, you know, whatever tool to get the thing, our talk time is actually generally 50-50. And I think that and that's because that's how conversation works. I can't get, if I don't give, right? And if I want someone to be vulnerable with me, I need to share with them, and I need to share with them like what my experience is of this so that they can then connect to me and find that overlap, right? And so like you're not necessarily trained that in journalism because you're supposed to be an impossible human, which is like impartial, that's bullshit. Opinionless, bullshit. Supposed to be just like
bullshit.
Some anonymous person who's just like word processing these words together, like you're some AI, but even AI is biased, so you're all full of shit. Like nobody is doing that. It's that fundamental thing of like, if you and I, Grace, were given the same transcript of the same interview, we would pull different quotes depending on our worldview and our experiences and the point we're trying to make. So the idea that any of this is apolitical or unbiased, it's just bullshit. And so instead, I'm like, intentionally so, I have a worldview. Yeah. I am trying to communicate that. If you want to pretend you're not, go over there and get somebody else to do it, because I'm not going to do that. The choices, the stories that I choose to tell, the people whose voices that I choose to uplift, the ones that I think are important, are all due to what my worldview is. And that will be there in all of my work. I'm not going to write myself out of the story because I'm part of it. We're all part of it. And actually, a lot of the time with the stuff I'm doing, people haven't cared about it yet. So they need me to put my passion and my care into the story to help them find their way in, because if I'm not there loving it and they've never loved it before, then they don't know that it's precious. So it's like I have to be there loving the shit out of this thing so that if someone picks it up, they might not understand it yet, but they can understand that I fucking love this stuff. Yeah. So maybe you will too.
I like to ask, is there anything I haven't asked during this conversation that I should have asked?
Is there anything I think it's the idea of whether so much has changed, whether things have got better, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, I don't necessarily think they have. I just think we've got better maybe of having more people talking about it. So that's good. That's step one, right? Yeah. I don't think we've necessarily changed much. I think we're more or less in the same positions that we are. Because again, you go back to like the attitude stuff. We haven't changed that enough yet. So I guess the way to change that stuff is just to keep telling women that like they're fucking important. Their achievements are, their participation is, their performance is. All of it is important and is cool and is something that we should be celebrating. But honestly, we're still at that stage where we have to get people to like believe in themselves. That's the mad thing I think around like anything I do, is just like the amount of shit you can get someone to do if you just give them a compliment, which is like, holy fuck, man. Like how hard is it out there that people are getting so little that they will give so much for just that, you know?
Yeah. Just some praise, some recognition, like affirmation. Yeah.
Yeah. Just to be seen.
Thank you. Hopefully the mahi you're doing and I'm trying to do is getting there. Okay. Seriously, we're at the last question. Is, if you had to listen to just one musical artist for the rest of your life, who's it going to be?
That is so hard. Just one. I can't think of a genre. I can't necessarily think of an artist. Again, this is recency bias. Do you know what I mean? Where I'm going to like say some person and I'm like, yeah. Probably in that respect, I would say Olivia Dean would be, in terms of my recency bias on all of that. I believe she is based out of the UK. I say her or Big Pig? Who's Irish? They're both, whatever, I've snuck two in. Olivia Dean is probably more singer-songwriter, but flirting with the R&B genre. But it's the lyrics of it all. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. The words are good. And that's the... You know, I'm a person who likes words, because of course I do. I say a lot of them myself. So I appreciate her lyricism. So I would say, yes, Olivia Dean.
Oh, I'm going to go give her a listen. Alice, thank you for being on Tall Poppy Talk a second time. Also, like, I'm just cracking up, but also really motivated from talking to you. And I think that's what you do, is you make people laugh, but you also make people fucking think. So thank you for that, and thank you for your time today.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm sorry I completely derailed your interview. I'd be interested to see what your notes were in terms of like what you wanted me to talk about. And I was like, by the way, blah, blah, blah. One thing I will just say is women's sports, right? Yeah, I do their podcast for them. But the team behind that is Danny and Mel. And they're fucking epic. They're a couple of Americans who are basically Trump refugees, aside from anything else. Like, and came to New Zealand to restart their lives. And like Mel in particular, I'm so fucking proud of. Like, Danny, I love you. I know you might listen to this. But let's be honest, girl, you were always going to be doing something like this. But Mel, I am so fucking proud of, because she has had to learn how to be a producer and has to edit my shit. And that's hard. You've just listened to me, right? I talk too much. But Mel is like, listens to that stuff. She is so beautiful and generous and open in ways that, like, you know what Americans are like? They have that in them. And I love that. Like, it's kind of like that naive confidence that they have, but like also like the most hype of self-belief that's like, fuck, that's cool though, dude. Like, I don't get it, but good for you. But like, I fucking love those two. And like, they've come over here. They have set up that women's sports thing. You know, it's like you're just women's sports. It's like you're together, your female athlete project over in the US. It's just a place that's all women's sports, New Zealand women's sports all the time. And they drive all of that, these two. And then now Danny is co-owner of the Kahu, which is the Auckland basketball team, and that's a group of my mates that have bought that, and they're again just changing shit up. And I love it's really hard to find doers. This is another one of my lines. There's a lot of CV builders, not enough community builders, right? And it's really hard to find people who will actually do, and those two are a couple of epic doers, and I wouldn't be able to do what I do unless I have other people that are willing to get in there with me. So I like, while I might be a face in that platform, it's those two that are the like driving engine of it. And so I need to make sure I give them their flowers.
Yeah, 100%. Grow those poppies, Mel and Danny. Amen, brother. Alice, thank you.
Such a pleasure, Grace. You're lovely.
Thank you so much for listening to Tall Poppy Talk. We'll see you next time. Feel free to check us out on socials, YouTube, and the website. Thanks for today's guest, and we'll see you all next time. Take care. Be kind.